Okay, the Parshas Korach, the first piece deals with the Ramban, and it starts with understanding how Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to be Melamed Zchus and Kol Yisrael. And it helps us understand the concept of what it means to be Melamed Zchus and how one does it. So it's going on the pasuk that he was told he brought him to chaydazos v'chalosim karaga, that he was told to he told Kaisel, move away from this group and I'll destroy them. So he puts down a question. Yesh lishol im yisrael lo chotuv lamardu berabam loma aketzav aleim lema v'chalosim karaga. If they didn't sin, well then why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to kill them? HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, get away from this whole Eidah, v'achaz and karaga. V'im gam hi mar kof adosoi, eche Moshe Rabbeinu ish echad yechta hara Eidah tiktoi. And if they did, if they were part of the merida against Moshe Rabbeinu, so how do we tell them, how did Moshe say one person sinned? They all sinned, either or. So Rabbeinu Hananel brings in pshat an answer over here that it was actually a mistake as to whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant the aid of Korach or the aid of Kol Yisrael. Ramban doesn't like that, and just in the pshat of the pasuk doesn't think that's right. Avol HaTam, it's sort of two paragraphs further. Kimitchilo yaleva macha Moshe v'Aaron. First, people sided with Moshe Aaron. When Korach took the machta, took the Torah, stood there, and Korach turned around and told them, I'm doing it for all of you. I'm fighting your war. And they liked that. And they all stood around thinking, well, maybe he's right. And maybe the Bechoros will get it back. Maybe we'll all be part of the Avodah again. So he says they were Mechayev Kliya. They were, at that point, they deserved to be killed out. He says, Shoy Meharim Achirabam. Because they were Meharer Acharabam, they suspected maybe their Rebbe wasn't doing right. V'heim k'meharim achar ashchino u'mevatel nevuas lov b'libam. It's as if they had, so to speak, tainus on the Shechina itself, and therefore didn't want to listen to the Navi, and therefore the Chayev Misa b'dei Shemayim. Let's talk about this point, being Meharer Acharabam. It's sort of Mahara Harabam is used to solicit total submission. It means that if you have issues and suspect about your Rebbe something, you can Mahara Hashchina. So the question is, well, what about a Talmud of Acher? Reb Meir was a Talmud of Acher, and when Acher went off and was over the Avodah Zarah, should he have been docile and said no, well, I guess he must know what he's doing and I should worship with him? The Yochanan Kohen Gadol, he became a tzduki after 80 years, should everyone have followed him? But what does Mahara Harabo mean over here in terms of the Isser? When is a person not supposed to be Mahara Harabo? When is a person, when is it like Shechina and so on? So I think the person does not more information here. I think what he means to say is, if a person has an objective issue, in other words, his Rav seems to be doing something that is keneged shacharuch, or it's wrong, or even a Navi that tells you to worship Avodah Zarah, you can't listen to him. I think that's a double pashit. And if somebody thinks he's wrong, it says, Ein cholkim covered the Rav b'malchut Hashem. So the Janala b'mahara achar harav is means when you have it does not mean when you have an objective set of issues that what he's saying seems to be opposite shacharuch, opposite what we know to be true. There's no inyan to remain dasa on that. It says there's aimechal and kavod l'rav and so on, but the issue is, like over here, where it wasn't a question of halacha is right or wrong. They were accusing him that the reason why he's doing X is because he has a personal gear or something like that. There was no reason to think mitzad halacha that he's wrong. There was no reason, there was no shaharach against it. It was just a lack of trust in his integrity, fueled by their own possible desires to do X or Y or Z. And that's where it was Maharach HaRabbi. So it belongs sort of in the same getter of where a person uses an excuse to get out of authority. Moshe was a Navi. He was the Melech of Chai Yisrael. What he was telling him, there was no reason mitzat shoharach why there would be an issue there. So the only issue was because we could say it's just politics, it's just doing that, just doing that. That's where it comes in, this in being Maharach HaRabbi. Yes, Pinchas.
Really, in the first instance where the Rav is going Keneged Shulchan Aruch, how does Horasha fit into that?
So Horasha itself is fine. In other words, if the Navi comes and says, I am now giving you a Horasha, so that's not Keneged Shulchan Aruch because the Shulchan Aruch says, ignore Rasha. But if he tells you the Shulchan Aruch has been changed, like Shapsi Tzvi, like Yeshu, like or whoever was the one that changed it, and like Acher, it's not Horasha does fit into it. Horasha says you can override a halacha when it's only temporary and only for great need, and if the Navi is a muchzik. So that's also not. It's similar to, and I guess we would in secular law, you have sometimes powers, emergency executive powers, for situations. They are an override on normal process of law, but it is legal as part of that legal system. So that's the same thing a Hirasha would be. Okay, so the first thing is there was a Harach HaRabim. I want to maybe talk a little bit more about this. We'll see later a bit about what was the terrible Avera with the Machlokas of Korach and so on. It belongs to the larger picture of the only way in which authority can function in Klai Yisrael is if people are mevatel their das to authority. And you know, it's true about Mesiras HaTorah, it's true about Tzibur D'Kinyanim and so on, and therefore they're undermining something. The machlokas of Korach is not as machlokas in two people, it's a machlokas on an element of Malchus Karsol to Malchus against Nevuah, and that's why it was such a terrible machlokas. Then it says, Moshe v'Aaron lomdu olim schus. What was the schus? Shalichote b'maisa l'korach v'hu agorim v'hu mefata oisom v'rohu hu sheyomus levadai lefarsan odion shel rabim v'zid derech mevak shirachmim sheyikalu hachet mal'om. So Rabban says interesting nekuda here. He says it is part of the schus, part of the process of limud schus, is when you cite an individual that is the guilty person because he fomented the unrest and so on. And he brings the next paragraph the same thing about David HaMelech's limud schus in Klal Yisrael. I want to describe this a little bit also. The moral in many places explains the nature of chet or the severity of chet as depending to which level of nefesh it's reached down to. At what level did this take place? Let's take an extreme example. A person who absentmindedly does an Avera, on Shabbos he walks by and just turns on the light because he's just kind of flicking things and playing with things, that might be called a misasik, and that's the very lowest level of chet. And the more that you, the more that this is part of what you really want in a very fundamental way, the worse the Avera is. There is a koach in a person to be influenced by someone else. And that koach is this powerful koach, but it describes a more outer layer of the nefesh. Let's give an example. Let's say you meet somebody, and this person is, you know, you just moved into a town, and somebody comes over to greet you and to visit, and he tells you you've got to be very careful from X. X is a person who is out to get other people. Let me give you some idea of the things he's done. My tires are slashed. Nobody knows who it was, but it's clear to me that he did it. I sometimes hear a buzzing sound on the phone, and whenever I walk to shul that day, this person is grinning at me, and so on. Sometimes you're very, very, it's convincing, and you are taken in by it, and you say, yes, this person seems to be circumstantial evidence, but it also seems a very evil person. But there's a difference in you and the person that's telling you this. The person that's telling you this is a paranoid be'etzem. In other words, his mind sees plots wherever he walks. That's his mind. You were convinced of that, but it's like a kli rishon and a kli sheni. I mean, his fire always cooks with paranoia. You, when somebody pours in hot liquid, hold on to it. But the musas and the mesis are of a different nature. Because the mesis, in order to accomplish what he's trying to do, needs to live it very passionately. You have, if you take a look in the history of Klal Yisrael, something like Shabtzi Tzvi. Let's take an example of Shabtzi Tzvi. Shabtzi Tzvi was an extraordinarily charismatic, imbalanced person. In other words, I think he really thought he was Mashiach. He might have been crazy of a manic depressive type, and he had tremendous koch of hashpa on other people. But it's two different worlds. The people taken in by him, when they were burnt or scalded, they were, it looked like it. It's like the soup in the plate, when it lands, is just as hot as the soup in the cauldron. Halachically not, but physically it's very, very close. The difference is when you leave it for a while, the soup in the plate gets cooled off, and the soup on the fire keeps bubbling. The limudei schus on Klal Yisrael are not to dispute the evidence, because that doesn't exist. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not. There's no question of the fact. Limud schus is to try to identify it as something belonging to an outer chelik of the nefesh. For instance, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he was trying to do the Chet Egel, he says you gave him too much gold and silver. This is just an over leisurely lifestyle that created boredom and created a need for tzatzkes. But it's explaining this is not who they are be'etzim, these are circumstances, and it doesn't go to his atzmius. I want to add one more point about limud schus. Limud schus is not just a game with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It helps the person being melamed schus as well. If a person is busy doing X or Y or Z, which he shouldn't do, and then the person realizes that he's doing it because the crowd is doing it and he's going with them. Somebody is desperate for friends, and the group that takes him in is a gang. They rob or they steal whatever. They're robbers, they're murderers. He's a guy looking for friends desperately. So once he himself puts down that claim, it's of tremendous benefit to himself. He realizes this is not me, this was my desperation to hook on to people. So the Limud Schus is not just a game with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it helps us understand that, you know, this is not what we really think, we were just swept up by somebody charismatic, and that's why we went along. And he brings down the Limud Schus of David HaMelech and Klal Yisrael, where David HaMelech said, I was the guilty one, and I forced them all to do it, and so on. I got them to give, he's talking about up there, about the way they counted them, they weren't supposed to be counted. He then adds another point, a sort of off topic, but it is an interesting point, something that I guess when a person learns Navi should well pay attention to. He says it's a strange parasha there. It says that David was incited to count them, and he counted them, and he got punished. Rabban says there's another element over there. V'oid, k'mulvara minyan, hoya oynesh al ha'om mitchilas dova kidechsiv, v'yosef Hashem lach l'Yisrael, v'yosef dov behem. In other words, it says, Klai Yisrael did the sin, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore incited David to get them to do an Aveira. There was something, this wasn't, the counting them was the explosion, but the fuel was there from before. And Rashi says he doesn't know why. So Ramban says his own svara. He says, Shaya Einesh a Yisrael bis acha binyan bis abchira. Shaya Aron holach me'or le'or kiger ba'aretz. V'in ha'shvotim esar le'mon nirz Hashem nirv ha'bayit ha'shmoy. The Aron kept wandering, and nobody in Klal Yisrael had it in them to say, you know, it's very not right the way it is. We need to get something permanent for it. It took David a long time to get to it. And he says something very interesting. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu told David, you can't do it because you spilled a lot of blood. David and it wasn't built till Shlomo was there. Had Karsel wanted, it could have been done in the times of Shoftim or Shaul or in times of David. But what we said, David couldn't because he spilled a lot of blood. So he says something. If Klal Yisrael would have been the one to, if they would have been aroused sufficiently and created the dynamics to build the Beis HaMikdash, it would have been their Beis HaMikdash, not David HaMelech. So Ramban says a tremendous yesod. When we talk about people that do great things in Tanakh, we're not talking about who actually carried it out. It's where did the initiative come from it? Whose idea was it? It's always the person's idea. The marshal, if Reuven thinks about building a Beis Medrash, and he hires a whole crew of goyim to build it, he's the builder. The people laying the bricks are laying the bricks because someone hired them to lay a brick. It's not them. So in the dynamics in Klal Yisrael and David HaMelech, the reason why David is called the builder is because he got up and said, Rabbi Yisai, it's a darn shame. We're living in wonderful homes, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Beis HaMikdash is non-existent. We've got to do something. If they would have come to him and said, David HaMelech, we're embarrassed how we can let the Mishkan be in such state, and we must build a Beis HaMikdash, even if he would have been the executive, it would have been called on their name, and his own personal shortcomings wouldn't have stopped it, because he's not the builder. He physically lays the bricks, in a sense. He gets the bricklayers and he gets the money, but at the end of the day, whoever initiates something, that's on whose name it is. Something is, the credit goes not to the person who actually carried out, but the person that started the process. Okay, the next piece is a Rambam. It's a Rambam in Akdamas, in his Akdamah to Chelek, where he speaks about the different Yesodos. And this is, obviously, you can't get more important than a Yesod. Vayesod HaShmini, he says, the eighth Yesod is Heyos HaTorah Min HaShemayim. That Torah is Min HaShemayim. The Rambam says, the Rambam defines the parameters of Torah Shemayim differently than you would expect. Kloma, Sheigialav Kulo, Me'ez Hashem Yisbarach Be'inyan Shenikra Al Derech Hashayla Dibur. Everything, he got everything from Shbarach Hu in a way that we would call, that we call Dibur. In other words, Dibur is not speech the way we physically know it, but it's communication. We don't know the mechanics of that speech and how it got to him. Elohaya Moshe Hashem Shigilo. Moshe was the recipient of that communication. V'chi hu haya k'may seifa shekoyrin lo. He was like a secretary. V'koysev kol ma'oyrois hayomim ha-sipurim v'amitzvus lefignin k'amachoykeik. He wrote the history, the stories, the mitzvahs. He simply was the secretary. Vein hefesh bein ubnei cham kusha mitzrayim v'shem eish ishtoy ma'atavil v'tinlai sipilegesh v'chashon kecho shma yisrael ki hakoil mipi ha-gvura v'hakoil teres Hashem t'mima t'hoira u'kdoisha emes. Every single element of the Torah is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe and nothing of his own. This is a very critical piece in Torah Min HaShemayim. In other words, the main point of Torah Min HaShemayim, at first glance, one assumes that it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Torah. He says, all of Torah was given HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is no room in any element in Torah that has any input from someone other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If anyone says that any of the stories in the Pesukim were written by Moshe, because he thinks that the Torah has in itself a heart, an essence, and a shell. The rest of it is embellished for Moshe Rabbeinu and so on. And this is a very, very important sort of crossroads. And it's interesting that Rambam writes this 1,000 years ago, whereas this was at the heart of, let's say, the conservative movement, where they were willing to acknowledge a divine origin of sorts, they called it inspiration of the Torah, but not the details. And the reason why this is where the emphasis is goes back to what Rama says in Avodah Zarah. We always have to understand nobody makes the jump from Emunah Shleima to Kfir Gemura. Or better said, no sane or settled person would ever do that. I mean, a person believes in something passionately, so calls off a little bit, but the way in which you build a bridge between the two is by saying, we very, very much affirm the Torah and its wonderful and eternal truth. The stories are stories. The stories are there to demonstrate the truth. This Moshe Rabbeinu used the devices and stories, etc., etc. So any time a person is kaifer in any part of the Torah, to say that Moshe wrote it, that becomes kfira. Yes?
Rabbi, I guess the Rambam is paskening here against the Mandamar. I think it's in Baba Basra, who says that the last psukim were written by Yeshua.
So those, again, going back to the thing we said before, then that's the Masoros we have with that person.
That's within the system.
Yes, that's within the system. In other words, he says the system itself is telling you, if it says here, this is, the Torah was written not al derech ha-pshat, if it says vayomos, then it's as if it's stating otherwise. But it's not. It's not because it's a disbelief. It's a question because within the system, that's what it seems to be saying.
And any distinction between Sefer Devarim and the other Svarim also would be
right. That would be there's a famous Pesukim. The others explaining what is the difference in Devarim when it says that mipi atzmo yamron. Will he speak about it? He won't speak. But we will have it when we get to Devarim. We'll have the Rishonim speak about, but what it means that this mipi'at and this mipi'at gvura. But at the end of the day, all of it, there is no Moshe writing it because he felt it was good and so on. V'she'el d'vayom ha'sipurin to elas behem shemesha shabein al ha'shalim. I want to add a point here that I guess sort of floats under the surface. We ask ourselves, I understand, for instance, let's say somebody is writing a tshuva. Somebody writes tshuvas. So we say, wow, that's takes a lot of, to be a big Talmud Chacham, to get a shayla, write a tshuva, and so on and so forth. How big of a Talmud Chacham do you need to be to type up tshuvas? So we have a lady who gets the tapes of this, we have this big Rav who's writing a lot of tshuvas for him, and he taught him to write all. So he sort of gives her tapes and she types it. Does she have to be a major Talmud Chacham? Do we say that, wow, she's already written six big volumes of tshuvas? So what's the beginning of Moshe Rabbeinu? Mele of Moshe Rabbeinu is writing himself, like Nevi'im, so at least they write it themselves. So they have to be, they obviously were quote-unquote big people. But Moshe Rabbeinu is mamish, every single last dot is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's. So, I mean, all you need is somebody with typing skills. And the answer is, It would not. The mashal is not somebody sitting and typing somebody else's material. Imagine somebody is translating somebody's things. So we want to know if Reuven is translating exactly what Shimon said. So one level of it is skills. Fine. The second level is that the person's mindset be in tune with the mindset of the person speaking. In other words, what do you mean? Whenever I'm translating, I need to make decisions on what you really mean, and I need to find the precise term how to give it over. If I have any difference, if my mindset is any different than the mindset of the person I'm translating, there is going to be some aberration. I mean, we're not talking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The picture's not somebody with a secretary typing. There's a Dvar Hashem that exists in the world of Nevuah, and somebody has to have the ability, and that ability is totally in the level of the nefesh, to understand precisely what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to, and as to be able to put it into the words precisely. That was the Gaon of Moshe Rabbeinu. It was Aspakaya Meir in the sense there was no distortion because he wasn't in sync with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whenever you have you have something goes from one medium to another medium, if there's any differences, they're problematic, and that's where you get all sorts of issues when you try to move something one format to another format. You need to be able to say that the person, Moshe Rabbeinu, clearly they heard what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted.
So yes. Is what are you saying that when Hashem, quote-unquote, spoke to Moshe, there wasn't any speech, so to speak, it wasn't Bereshit.
Exactly.
He didn't tell him a word.
Exactly.
He gave him it was the Hashpah of Nevuah, and then when Moshe wrote that down, that was...
Hagabat Mecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have developed voice to writing technology. If Dragon could do it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have just quote-unquote spoke and the tablets would have written themselves. He didn't need to have a cipher. The answer is we are talking about moving something vague into a world of words. Imagine, let's take another example. Imagine somebody has great ideas and feelings and passions and so on. He's not an eloquent speaker or writer, and he hires somebody to write it for him, to say it. It's one of the most frustrating jobs, because even if the person is extremely good, many, many times the person speaking will say, I, it's not what I meant. It's not exactly what I meant. Because it's almost impossible for somebody to be in tune with someone else. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu's godless was, he was Neman, the whole basis of Neman, faithful, doesn't mean he doesn't steal anything. It means he's true to the source. He gives over exactly what was heard and so on. Not that I'm saying, this is a point I'm adding because I feel it's a very important point to make, because or else it sort of becomes an obvious question, like what's Moshe Rabbeinu's godless here? Bezenyin ain't term in a shemayim. That's what doesn't mean term in shemayim. Even if he says, of course it was given as an idea, but it was Moshe Rabbeinu was the writer who fleshed it out with nice stories and stuff. Omer Chazal, So the reverse, let's understand how this is nogea practically. How much effort and how appropriate is it for a person to stand and to darshan what it says in the Torah? For instance, if a person says something, a person is not especially a big person, say, this is what he said, that's what he said, that's what he means, what you heard is what you get. And when somebody is a brilliant person, a deep person, when a person is deep and a person has things and says things that is you say to yourself, you know, I really need to think in, he must mean a lot of things. Our approach to Torah has to be that every single word in it carries the quality of infinite as God has spoken. If it be Moshe's, well, it's as good as Moshe is. Moshe was a human being, you know, and it has, you could say, a person who's very deep and skilled can write something that has 2, 3, 4 meanings to it, but that's it. Torah has itself an infinite amount of facets, and a person, no matter how much of it he's captured, there's much more. A person always has to be, the Torah is supreme, and I need to open up my eyes and see it. This includes, Torah min Hashemayim includes that the written law in its words is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant to say, and that's why you can dash into words and the letters and everything about it. And it also means that the oral description of the Torah was also given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one without the other is a destruction of Torah. V'amalonu, he told us, v'nema b'shlichus and his faith and shlichus. In other words, there's no change between what he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant. There are no additions. Neman means there is nothing that's in the original that's not in the Torah we have, and there's nothing in the Torah we have that's not the original. Where do we see it? So the Rambam says, and it's sort of apparent from what the Rambam is saying, that the significance of this machlokas, whereas in a way the Ramban comes at a different angle when he speaks about Munas Chachamim, here we're speaking about specifically in the Nevuas Moshe. If Moshe could ever have stated something, forget about whether it's Torah or not, but if he could ever have stated something, Rabbi Yisai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would like my brother to be Kohen Gadol, and his children to be this, and him that, if he ever could have done it on his own, then everything else has been disqualified from being presented as Torah min Hashemayim. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu is a person who's got his own agenda, and you know, sometimes yes, sometimes not. There's no guarantee. So there's no guarantee for anything. The Torah min Hashemayim requires a belief in Moshe Rabbeinu that Moshe Rabbeinu was the perfect Neman. Everything that came from him was, if he said HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it. There's no way around it. And it holds true on two levels, Rambam says. It holds true on the written Torah Shebiktav in all of its details, and it holds true on the halachas. Now, by that same token, the halachas about sukkah, you can't darshan the words. The mishnayos are wonderful, but you can't darshan mishnayos like you darshan a chumash, because in mishnayos, what's Torah min Hashemayim is the idea that a sukkah has X amount of walls, that tzchach has a certain thickness and a certain size, etc., etc. Those, that is definitely called Torah Shebal Peh. There are no words that you can say is Min HaShemayim. Torah Shebal Ksav, the chiyuv is to believe that the words are Min HaShemayim. So the machlokas of Korach was a machlokas to really crack Torah. And that's why it was so important to make such a powerful statement that Moshe is Emes and Torah is Emes. Okay.